reviewing Yahweh's testimony regarding how we should individually go about our responsibility to determine whether or not someone who claims to have been authorized and inspired by God actually is. I mean, Paul makes this claim. There is no endorsement of him. There is no point where God himself says, this is my guy. In fact, God says exactly the opposite, that this is a wolf in sheep's clothing, that this is a false prophet, that this is a man who is the plague of death. But Paul makes that claim, and Christians believe him. They read his letters as if they were divinely inspired scripture. They don't even bother to consider whether or not God provided a means for them to make that determination. They will routinely skip over statements that Paul makes that, of course, prove that he was not inspired by God. For example, when he wrote that he was demon-possessed and insane in his second letter to the Corinthians. Just skip right over that part. They skip right over the part where Paul claimed that he acted fraudulently, that he misled his audience into believing that he was one of them, that he agreed with them so that he could deceive them, which is something he wrote in his first letter to the Corinthians. They just look right past it. When Paul says that the Torah cannot save, they don't bother to think, wait a minute, he's claiming to speak for the very God who authored the Torah and said just the opposite of that. They just don't think. When Paul promoted a religion in the name of the charities, the Greek goddesses of merriment and lasciviousness, which was then transliterated through the Latin gratias, or graces, into the gospel of grace, they didn't bother to think, wait a minute, a salvation method that allows those who do not know God, have no idea who he is, have no idea who he's offering, have no idea how to engage in a relationship with him, can accept him based on complete ignorance through faith in a gospel named after pagan goddesses. And they're not smart enough to say, yeah, maybe there's a problem with that. When Yahweh devotes the Torah to the covenant and says there's only one covenant and it is everlasting, and Paul writes in his first letter that there are two covenants and that the one memorialized in the Torah enslaves, and it was with Hagar, not Sarah and Abraham. There isn't one Christian in a million that thinks that through and say, wait a minute, that's impossible. That's a direct contradiction of what God said. This man is a fraud. Time and time again, when Yahusha said that to his disciples that someone is going to claim in their presence that they saw him in the wilderness, just as Paul did, that when someone makes that claim, don't believe them. He says, even though they'll be convincing, they'll fool even the set apart. And Paul made that very claim that Yahusha warned his disciples about. They don't pay any attention. When Yahusha in the Sermon on the Mount said, do not think that I came to annul or do away with the Torah, and then quantified by that by saying that every stroke and every letter, even the smallest stroke and the smallest letters of the words in Hebrew which comprise the Torah will remain intact so long as the heavens and earth exist. And Paul annulled the Torah. Christians know that he did away with the Torah. They think of the Torah as something that doesn't apply to them. Now they're under the gospel of grace. They have a New Testament, not that Old Testament that's Torah-based. They think that Paul, on behalf of their religion, did away with the Torah. And yet, Yahusha said exactly the opposite. Exactly the opposite. And they believe Paul over Yahusha. They have no excuse. No one to blame but themselves. And so I want to make our way through the end of this testimony from the Torah that tells us how to compare writings and determine if someone is a false witness. So therefore, that prophet or interpreter of revelations is deadly. Yahshua said, I've shared with you that the principal criticism of the translations of the Torah prophets and Psalms found in yadayah.com, introtogod.org, and questioningpaul.com is that they can't be true because a merciful God could not require knowledge for salvation, because there were a period of times where knowledge was difficult to come by. That's their argument. So knowledge can't be the basis of salvation. Well, here they say that God is saying that if you accept as true the revelations of a false prophet, you're going to die. So, lack of knowledge regarding who's a false prophet is deadly. I would think that dying, deadly, is the antithesis of being saved. That's just my opinion, of course. But it seems pretty clear to me. I would interpret death as the opposite of saved. What do you think? God says, if you fall prey to this false prophet and their revelations, you're going to die. I mean, this test is laid down specifically to warn us about Paul. And so an inability to recognize, to know that Paul was a false prophet, that the religion he conceived, Christianity, is erroneous, worthless, isn't bliss. It's deadly. Now, it strikes me, of course, that why would God bother to create the universe and conceive life and offer us with free will and provide us with a copy of his Torah, introducing himself to us, proving his existence through his prophets? Why would he bother with such things if he didn't care whether or not we came to know him or not? Why would he bother with an explanation, a path from our corrupt worlds to his home, and invite us to participate in those events if they were irrelevant? If God is just simply going to accept anyone, regardless of what they know, what they believe, what they accept, what they do, then why even bother with this life? Why not just transition everybody into heaven? What's the purpose of any of it? Of course, their position is preposterous, but it's the nature of religion. I can't argue with God. So since I can't argue with God, what I'm going to do is say that the whole idea of knowing God is worthless. Why would God want someone to spend eternity with him that doesn't even bother to get to know him? Therefore, a prophet or interpreter of revelations, that prophet is deadly. For indeed, he has spoken rebellious renunciations. Yeah, to denounce the Torah, which is Yahweh's teaching and guidance. You teach so that people will know. You guide, again, so that there is awareness of the proper way. You instruct so that people will understand. That's the very definition of Torah. And Paul renounced it. He renounced the Torah. He disassociated from the Torah. He turned aside from the Torah. He withdrew from the Torah. Pauline doctrine is a wholesale affront to the Torah. It is a rebellious renunciation of the very word of God. It is concerning and against Yahweh your God. the very one who led us out from the realm of the crucibles of Egypt, and the one who redeemed you from the house of bondage and slavery. Paul claims that the Torah enslaves. Yahweh says that the Torah frees, liberates. Paul says the Torah cannot save. Yahweh in the Torah says he is our Redeemer. If God is telling the truth, Paul is lying. His desire is to seduce you and scatter you. That was Paul's purpose. He wanted to have people accept his interpretation, his counterfeit, his doctrine as true. He wanted anyone who criticized him, just like Muhammad condemned, said so in his letter to the Galatians. And he did so, so that people would be taken away from God and unto him. It's the same purpose that rabbis had in creating Judaism. Take people away from God and to their authority. It's the same thing that the Roman Catholic Church did. Trying to take people away from God and to them so that they could control them. Larry is a big aficionado of religion and loves religious control. You're a perfect person to share the religious point of view, aren't you, Larry?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the religious point of view is just very simply, follow me, give me money, let me oppress you, let me change Yahweh's very nature, character, and plan,
yeah,
and bet your life on it.
Yeah, yeah, let me seduce you, let me scatter you. Let me entice you. Let me compel you. Let me draw you away. You know, every time I see a church, I just cringe. I said, you know, that church and its clerical staff exist to seduce, to entice, to compel, to draw people away from God. The very place on this planet, the places you would are the least likely to find Yahweh. In fact, you have no chance of finding him. Are in churches. You will never find God in a church, never find him in a synagogue. You will never find him in a mosque. He isn't in those places. Speaking of not knowing, the Roman Catholic Church for almost a thousand years, made it nearly impossible for anyone to know what Yahweh said, what Yahusha said. They were always of the proposition that either acquiesce to our authority as God's authority here on earth, or we're going to torture you. Doesn't sound very
That's
compelling
right.
to me.
No, it doesn't. Can I ask you something, Yahweh?
Sure.
How much money do you get by sharing Yahweh's words out here? How much are you paying?
Oh, you mean, you're talking about the 7,000 pages that I have translated and commented on, and how much do I get for the 3 or 4 years now between Blog Talk Radio, 5 years between Blog Talk Radio and Shattering Myths that I do, trying to awaken people to who Yahweh is and what he's offering? How much do I get paid for all of that?
How much money do you earn? Yes.
Negative. I pay for the opportunity.
Well, that's right, I know that. That's I want to read this. This is from 2 Corinthians.
Mm-hmm.
I committed as, and this is Paulos, he who is lowly and little.
Right.
I committed a sin in humbling myself because I preached the gospel of God to you without charge. Then. He said, I robbed other ecclesia taking wages to serve you.
Wow.
Now, here's what Yahweh says.
So wait a minute. I robbed.
Yeah, that's what he says.
Robbed. Yeah. I robbed. And by the way, where does Yahweh in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms instruct those who trust and rely on him to provide him with money?
Nowhere.
Where does he ask those who are his children to provide money to clerics?
Nowhere. In fact, he excoriated the clerics of the time for taking money and acting like it was theirs. Money for taking the tithe, which was food and wood and wool and things like that.
The tithe is you would leave a portion of your fields unharvested so that those who are hungry could go and harvest and then prepare the food. Had to work for it. They had to go harvest it and prepare it. And you were to instructed to provide wood, to provide some wool, and that was it. As for food, since Yahweh wanted nothing of the sacrifice, you fed the family with it, that you could provide food. That's it. And were you ever allowed to pay the clerics?
No.
Never. Never. In fact, could the clerics even own property?
No, they couldn't.
Could they accumulate any wealth of any kind? The Yahweh's mediators, the uniters, the priests. Could they own property? Could they accumulate wealth of any kind? Could they receive a financial? No.
No, they couldn't.
No.
I don't even like that word priest because all they really were was just. They were people. They were officiators.
The Hebrew word that's translated priest is kohen. It means to officiate. It was they were the folks that helped those who were illiterate, and there were a lot of people that were illiterate, understand what Yahweh had said, and they served to officiate the Moed Mikre. So that the symbolism of the visual symbolism of what was being done could be understood. So that was their purpose. And they were all Lowi, which has been corrupted to Levite. Lowi, which means uniters. So the purpose of officiating at Yahweh's Moed Mikre was to unite humankind with Yahweh. I would ask you another question since we're talking about providing information so that people would know. Could, now that you know who Yahweh is based upon having studied his Torah and his prophets and Psalms, is it possible that even the most articulate individual in all of humanity, could the most articulate argument seduce you? Could you be enticed?
No.
And what was the antidote?
The antidote was simply Yahweh's words. I mean, Yahweh, for one, he's not into religious imagery. He doesn't want any religious imagery associated with him whatsoever. He also does not want any religion brought into the covenant.
Correct.
He calls religion the whore.
Right.
That's the
whore of Babylon is
Yahweh
religion.
Talking.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, not only is the whore of Babylon religion, the most perfect fit as a specific human entity for the whore of Babylon. It's a Roman Catholic Church. So it tells you what God's view is of religion. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Larry, what does Yahweh have to say to those who lack knowledge? Since the criticism of what you and I present on behalf of Yahweh is that we state what he states, which is that it is important to come to know what he said, to come to know who he is, to know what he is offering, and then to respond to it. What did he say about those who take the opposite point of view?
Well, what he says is you're condemned, you're separated, is what he says. You're separated from me. Due to lack of knowledge, and he goes, and you're not going to be efficient people that officiate for me, and I'm going to forget about you, and I'm going to forget about your children. That's what he says.
And does he, in that, because you're obviously quoting from Hosea, which means salvation, does he reference any writings in particular when he says you have forgotten about me and you're ignorant of me? Yeah, he does, doesn't he? Yeah, right there.
I'm going to forget about you.
Yes, actually, because you have forgotten and you don't care about. You've ignored my Torah. I'm going to ignore your children. So how would it be, in light of that, possible that the critics of what of the translations that are provided to Yahweh's testimony and an intro to God.org and questioningpaul.com and yadayah.com, their claim that all of that is wrong because it requires the person to know, it sounds to me like God's position is the opposite of theirs.
Yeah, that would be it. Now, I mean, it shouldn't surprise any of us. We know everything in the world. Every worldly institution is corrupt, isn't it? I mean,
yeah. You know, there's a linebacker that plays football now. He used to play football for Notre Dame. He's a Mormon. He went to the Catholic school of Notre Dame. And then now he plays for the San Diego Chargers. Yeah, Manti Te'o. That had a relationship with an imaginary girlfriend. And talked to the media about how distressed he was when that imaginary girlfriend died. What is the merit? What's the value of having a relationship with an imaginary God?
None. There's none. It's a waste of time. I've seen people actually just hurt themselves over it. You know, it's like. Somehow the imaginary God, he loves it when they sacrifice something, I guess.
Right.
You know, his sacrifice wasn't enough. He needs
their. Yeah. You know, amongst Christians,
you know?
How many times do the Christians who come to you and are critical of what you cite from Yahweh's testimony, how often do they come to you and say, you're misquoting Yahweh's words. You don't really know Yahweh. That, you know, it's we are the ones who are listening to and are following and are learning from Yahweh. Do they ever say that?
No.
No. Do they ever even use
really
Yahweh's name?
They use opinions, and they call their God Lord. I actually had one of them tell me that when Jesus arrives, he's going to defeat Yahweh. Actually said
that is, but you know that's not crazy because that is the Christian position that their Jesus Christ annulled the God of the Old Testament, that he did away with the God of the Old Testament. That's the reason they don't pray to God as in Yahweh. They don't even know him. They pray to their Jesus Christ because their Jesus Christ is the replacement God. That was the whole purpose of Roman Catholicism.
Yeah, that was the point of the Council of Nicaea, to separate Yahusha from Yahweh. It's the only way they can start a religion based on the life and times of Yahusha after they changed his name. You know, now how do you start a religion in the name of somebody who absolutely loathed religion, hated religion, exposed religion, was attacked by the religious, killed by the religious. And
why would you model that religion after the most popular pagan god, the son of the sun, in the Greek and Roman religion, Dionysus and Bacchus, and incorporate all of Dionysus' and Bacchus' holy days and all of their attributes into your religion, and then claim that your religion is based on the Old Testament, flows out of the Old Testament, when in fact there A, is no Old Testament, and B, it's regurgitated paganism.
Well, I don't think that anybody, honest person, would honestly do it. I do think there are people that are honestly deceived, but the people who established their religion knew exactly what they were doing. They knew it.
Yeah. When God said that... that the false prophet's desire, Paul's desire, Christian cleric's desire, is to scatter and seduce you from the way which beneficially Yahweh, your God, described, providing you with a complete set of directions. So God says, I gave you directions, so you think he's going to accept the excuse, well, I didn't know that you gave us directions. What is the odds of me? God says, I gave you a complete set of directions regarding the way. Do you any place where in a Christian church or Christian literature they describe Yahweh providing a complete set of directions?
No.
No. They hate Yahweh's directions. His directions is called the Torah. He says that's a complete set of directions.
They
matter of fact, they created a whole new set of directions called the New Testament.
They've been led to believe that the Torah is 613 laws. I've had them tell me that.
Oh, yeah.
The Torah does not.
Yeah. And by the way, the number is chosen because it's supposedly the number of seeds in a pomegranate. That's not the number of seeds in a pomegranate. We're close. It's also chosen because it's supposed to be the number of bones in the human body. It's not close to that either. And it's also chosen because there are supposedly 613 laws in the Torah. You know how many laws there are actually in the Torah?
None. There's no law.
You know. Lots of instruction. Lots of guidance.
Yeah, and the list of instructions are pretty minimal when it comes down to meeting the threshold of being
correct.
Adopted into the family. A person, a male, and we're to do this for our sons, is to be circumcised. We have a Shabbat. We love Yahweh's name. We actually use Yahweh's name. And we, attend the seven set apart days, which are not religious holy days, by the way. They're parties. They're celebrating.
Yeah, there's only five requirements for participating in the covenant. They're not laws.
You've got to walk away from
house rules
to start with.
House rules, yeah. There's five rules, five conditions for participating in the covenant. Only five. Yeah, the first is you've got to walk away from Babylon. Babylon is religion and politics. You've got to walk away from your country. Can't be political, can't be patriotic, and come into heaven. God doesn't want that rubbish in heaven. That's the kind of rubbish that makes earth hellish. That's the kind. Religion is the kind of stuff that kidnaps and enslaves and rapes little girls and murders innocent people in chocolate shops. That's religion. God doesn't want religion in heaven. I don't blame him. I don't want religion in heaven. I'm going to spend a lot of time there. I don't want anyone who's religious there.
No,
God most certainly doesn't.
They're irrational.
So that's the first requirement. You've got to walk away from that stuff. In fact, in this particular statement, God says, I gave you a complete set of instructions regarding the beneficial way for you to walk in. And the second requirement for the covenant is to trust and rely on Yahweh. And the third is to walk to him and become perfect. He provided the walk, the complete set of directions that we should walk in for our benefit, which is to become perfect. All in the Torah. And the only way that you can trust and rely on someone is to know them and understand what they're offering. And, of course, the fourth is the most condemning to the salvation can't be based on knowing. It says that that if you're going to participate in the covenant, you must closely examine and carefully consider the terms and conditions of the covenant. It sounds to me like God's serious about the conditions for participating in his family.
Yeah, I don't think that God wasted his time with words. I think he means every word he says. In fact, he says he does. He says every single word that he said. I mean, as the tithe, I want to read this little part. This is out of Malachi. And what he says is, I think he's called Malachi today, I'm not sure. Just means messenger.
Yeah.
Does God exploit and rob man? But indeed, and he's talking to the clerics, you all exploit and rob according to me, but you ask in what way do we exploit you by force or deception? And Yahweh answers the tithe and the offering. Your perceptions is based upon appearance, but you actually extort his people. Return with all the tithe to the storeroom so that there will be freshly harvested food in my houses. That's what he says. And I've heard clerics.
So first of all, what must the tithe be? When the preacher in the Christian church says, dig deep and provide your tithe and offering, is he expecting somebody to put a cantaloupe in the... to put a chicken or a cantaloupe or an ear of corn? No. No, in fact, you'd throw it away if they did.
The food pantries that they have for the poor and all these circuses are a few canned goods. And meanwhile, you can just about bet the building fund has over $100,000 in it, even in these little...
Yeah, and that the pastor is given a place to stay and paid a very rich salary.
That's
what do you think that Rich Warren pays himself to deceive, to seduce? Oh, yeah, to deceive.
Yeah, this
pretty
is total deception. The tithe is theft today. It's theft.
Correct.
So when somebody tells
right.
you to tithe, see, this is why we're observing the Torah. We understand what Yahweh wants. He wants his people right. fed, clothed. He wants them taken care of. What he doesn't right. want is people to pretend to represent him and enrich themselves off of it. That's very clear by his words. And that's exactly what goes on in every circus, every Sunday.
Right. Yeah. You know, it's interesting that the children of Israel, as they're going across the desert, they were taken care of by their Heavenly Father. They were provided food to eat, weren't they? They were.
Yes, they were.
Their shoes were made to last for 40 years by Yahweh. So he provided them protection for their feet. He provided the protection so their clothing wouldn't wear out. They got thirsty. What did he provide? Water. God provides for his children. All right. I think it's interesting that the last line of Yahweh's advice regarding the false prophet is as follows. And so you should choose to completely remove that which is disagreeable, displeasing, and evil from your midst. That tells me two things. One is that those who falsely speak for God and alter what he has to say, corrupt what he has to say, are not only deadly, what they're communicating is disagreeable to God, displeasing to God, and viewed as evil. And second, that we are supposed to remove it. We're supposed to purge it, rid it from our midst. Both of those are important concepts, neither of which are understood by religious people.
Never will be understood by religious people because they don't read Yahweh's words, and when they do, they don't much like them. I mean, they're not interested in what Yahweh has to say. They will say things like, you know, these translations, they don't match what every expert in the world says. Well, you know, Yahweh says thousands find his mercy. He doesn't say billions. He doesn't even say millions. He says thousands. So if you're following traditions that billions of other people are following, you're clearly on the wrong path. Right.
Yeah, I would ask you this question, Larry. This statement was, and you should choose to completely remove that which is disagreeable, pleasing, and evil from your midst. It was written in the perfect conjugation, remove. Does that mean that God is putting us at liberty, providing advice to us that says you can therefore pick and choose from amongst what that prophet said, like Paul, and choose the parts you like get rid of the parts you don't like. What does the perfect conjugation tell us about how we have to translate ba'ar here, remove?
It means get rid of, totally.
All.
Completely.
Yeah, total. Right. The perfect conjugation means totally and completely. It means as one act. That means that at one time in your life, get rid of it all. Just completely disassociate yourself from a prophet who renounces what God has to say. Get rid of it. Separate yourself from it. This is completely remove it from your presence.
That's right.
Pretty straightforward, isn't it? So, under that basis, what would God's position be on acceptance and tolerance and multiculturalism?
He's not going to compromise, and he's not going to accept lies, and he's not going to say, okay, you got some truth in there with your lies, so we'll take that.
No.
He's uncompromising, yeah.
All right. So here it's basically a choice.
What always bothered me about politicians, by the way, was the way they would easily go up and compromise after they would whip people up in a frenzy about any given issue. Say it would be limiting government.
Right.
And then they go in, and what do? You know, instead of spending $6 billion, we'll compromise and spend 4.7. You know.
It's like this big thing that they're also proud of themselves and the Congress and Senate for not shutting down the government and passing their $1.1 trillion spending bill, which, by the way, is worth about 3 months. It's about one quarter of the annual budget for the United States is $1.1 trillion. And they're so proud of themselves. Oh, what money are they spending? Last time I checked, the U.S. government was bankrupt. They're $18 billion in debt.
Sure, we have more and more interest bills to pay until the whole thing collapses. That's what they're doing. That's what they're going to do.
Yeah. But why would you ever be proud of passing a spending bill when not only don't you have any money to spend, you're in debt many trillions of dollars, $18 trillion. I mean, it's insane, and yet the media has all congratulated them. Isn't it wonderful that they averted calamity? No. They assured calamity by funding another spending bill with $600 billion for the military. And perpetuating the pyramid schemes of Obamacare and of Social Security, all while we go further and further into debt. Yahweh wants to liberate us from being debtors, wants to liberate us from these scoundrels who would seduce us. He wants to liberate us so that as his children we can be free. We can engage and participate in his family forever.